Welcome to the Consummate Athlete Podcast, where we explore what it means to be a well-rounded, happy, goal-crushing athlete. Every week, myself, sports journalist Molly Herford, and cycling coach and kinesiologist Peter Glassford interview experts and chat through all of your training questions. We're excited to have you along for the ride.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Consummate Athlete Podcast. We are so excited. If you're watching on YouTube, we are back in our home studio. Peter, how is it going?
It's going well. I like that you oversell this studio, but it is. The lighting is better. We are seated in a good spot and happy to be home.
What's the phrase? You like dress for the job you want, the job you have.
What job is it that we want?
Is it fake it till you make it? I don't know. Whatever I'm doing right now, we are faking it till we make it. If you zoom out, it's not great, but right now, this cropped in look, looking good. You've got a great Strong Girl Publishing t-shirt on. Appreciate you repping the business.
Well, I didn't know I had it, so there we go. We're wearing this shirt. Can people get a Strong Girl shirt or books by Strong Girl at stronggirlpublishing.com?
Good job. Good ad read there.
Okay, that's great. You got the .com. That's impressive.
I was pretty proud,
okay. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, everyone should go to stronggirlpublishing.com because we just launched our new sort of header image, which does not sound like a big deal. But it is actually a really big deal. My good friend, illustrator Pip Claffey, did it for us, and I'm so, so jazzed on it. And I think, you know, small businesses that can act like that are actually, you know, I gotta put this out there. Small businesses like this one that are actually paying real artists for work, I think is really important.
You don't like robots, is that what you're saying?
I mean, I'm not saying I hate robots, but
yeah, you gotta be nice to the robots before they come and get you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If they're listening to this, I love them. They're fantastic. But you know, I see so many companies now trying to figure out how to use AI to kind of do all of this content and stuff. And I get that I'm sure someone's gonna play this back to me in 5 years. And I'm gonna laugh at how naive
Robot
I was.
Molly. Yeah, wearing your like animatronic hat or something.
At any rate, I just think it is important to, you know, continue to support creators, especially if one wants to be paid as a creator.
Sure.
It sort of makes
now,
sense.
Pip did the cover for your third Shred Girls book, I think?
For all of them, she did. Yeah, when we re-released them, she did covers for all of
them. Okay, well, there you go. You can see the stylings for that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's stronggirlpublishing.com, which is good. We forget to mention your other jobs.
We don't have time for my other jobs on this podcast. We are confined to the limits of an hour.
Have you written anything else of interest these last couple weeks?
Well, actually, I was just in the Bicycling Magazine offices last week on the note of all of the things and intros being read and stuff. And they will have a bike shop with Gabe video coming out with me talking about both saddle issues, saddle sores, which everyone who listens to this podcast knows is something I'm deeply passionate about, but also some aerodynamics for the everyman kind of content. So that was a fun thing to do, but I felt bad for Gabe because he's like, how should I introduce you? And I was like, man, I can't answer that question.
Okay, well, there you go. That's another chance to you could get a bicycling subscription and support journalism, one of the longest running magazines, or at least still running magazines out there. And
it's true, yeah.
They're good people. And you're in the, we didn't actually realize this, but you are, is that in the masthead? What is that called?
Yeah,
so Molly's name is in the front of Bicycling Magazine if you happen to pick one up.
Although I'm a little bummed because 10 years ago when I first started with bicycling, there was a time where I was in there as the Insegatori, which is Italian for chase group, which Bill Strickland, the editor-in-chief of Bicycling at the time, now he's the editorial director at the time, he gave me that title because I was always kind of bopping all over the place chasing the stories. Now it's a more boring contributor, but no one has cool names anymore, so I'll take it.
There you go. Well, we're here for another AMA. So we have AMA. I'm jumping between clients. We're here for another Q&A. And this is, which is sort of similar.
These are technically AMAs. You can feel free to ask us anything via Instagram, Consummate Athlete, or over at consummateathlete.com.
Sure. So. Sure. And you could always email us. I think info@consummateathlete.com works if you want to do that. We should double check that. So if you want to help me test that, that'd be great.
That has been on your to-do list.
But yeah, the messaging works great. And that could be private or not. You don't have to, you know, share who you are or anything like that. I mean, you'd have to tell us sort of on Instagram. But there you go. We're also on Facebook as well. So if that's a place you like to ask those questions. But we have three pretty good questions this week.
Pretty good.
The one isn't actually a question, but two are questions. And then one sort of like an uplifting study that just came out.
Okay. I love it. Okay. So the first one is around year-round intensity. I like this. So what do you think about keeping intensity in year-round? It seems like more people are doing Zwift races or track racing or indoor trainer workouts than there used to be. Will they all burn out or are they onto something? Loving the last part of the question.
Probably both. And yeah. Some will and some. I don't think this is new. I always think about, I used to do, when you used to buy a Fluid indoor trainer from Cyclops, they'd ship a CTS video, a VHS tape, I think, when I first got one. And it had not Chris Carmichael. It had Dean Gollich and a bunch of the Trek team. So I think Roland Green and Allison Sider. I think Travis Brown too was in this video. And so they all were positioned on their trainer, and you would put this videotape into your VHS player and you'd get on your trainer and you'd just pedal along. And Dean Gollich would tell you when to go hard and when to go easy. And they had a little, you know, speedometer type thing on the screen that just sort of said like, we're in the red zone, and then it would go to the green zone. And I think that was a 5x2 or something. And I don't know, I think I used to do that, you know, once a week or something.
Did it have like music in the background or anything?
I think a little bit. And then Dean Gollich would tell you, like, I recall, like, you know, mountain bikers have the best pedal stroke, and then they'd have some footage come in, like B-roll of, you know, like Allison Sider in like a muddy race.
Nice.
Climbing,
nice.
You know, using her smooth pedal stroke.
There you go.
So that's a little analogy or side tangent.
All that to say, it's not like the idea of doing intensity indoors or intensity in the winter is actually like that new. It's been around for
quite a time. If you look at back, like running or biking, like classics, you know, you could call it base one or accumulation phase. You know, running would always have sprints and, you know, these like shorter efforts sprinkled in, strides, that sort of thing. And then in a Joe Friel annual plan, if you went in and got your training Bible, you'd look at a base one and it would have force. So there would be things like, you know, again, sprints and, you know, 5 second this, or like maybe a lower RPM seated drill of some type. Carmichael would have, since we just mentioned them, you know, they would do similar with like their power starts and stomps and this sort of thing. So a lot of it was shorter. There was maybe less of what we see now is maybe more of like a Zwift race, where it's like 40 minutes full gas or plus or minus, like it could be shorter and more intense or longer. You know, I've seen people doing like 2 hour ones, and, you know, certainly they go, the sky's the limit, I guess.
Sure.
So that is new, this like racing, you know, where there's more comparison. You know, I was just there talking to my imaginary friends on the VHS tape. So, you know, it was maybe more controlled and not at that like 10 out of 10 level where some folks might be finding that. So I don't know. I think I don't think it's a bad thing. I really think that you probably could, you know, there's this like thing, this linear periodization where we go from like easy to hard, and you don't actually do the race intensity, or you don't actually do the race discipline. I always laugh about mountain biking in Canada. We don't do it for like 8 months of the year, which is really odd when you think about sports, especially as a pro, right? Like it's sort of an odd, you don't do the thing you know, at the intensity or even in the environment. Unless you're lucky to go somewhere. So I think sprinkling it around is okay.
Well, and I was going to say, certainly, you know, a lot of how we used to train was based entirely on how pros train or pros trained. And Phil Cabell mentions this in The Midlife Cyclist. But we're sort of the first cohort of master's age athletes who are like truly working normal jobs and also training and taking racing kind of seriously. They're not just tootling around on bikes. So the reality for most of us is like, we can't do what those elite riders used to be doing, which was hours upon hours and hours and hours of base in the winter during their during their base building season. They really did very limited intensity because they have the ability to do 30 hours a week on the bike.
Right. And that is the question then, right? Is what do you do when you only have 8 hours? And, you know, you could ride easy for, you know, probably 8 weeks and do 8 hours. But then at some point, you know, your body's going to adapt to that. So then it is, what do you change, right? If you're trying to gradually progress, or, you know, then what is the element that you're going to change?
And we sort of talked about this a couple of question or Q&As ago, when we talked about like, what should you focus on? We sort of said, okay, well, once you've nailed consistency, you're riding regularly, and once you've hit volume and you're kind of maxed out on, maybe not maxed out on the volume you physically can do, but maxed out on the volume that your schedule allows for, like, where do you go from there? And the answer is going to be intensity.
Yeah, probably. You know, you might get a few blocks there. I always give that challenge where I think most people could actually get fitter and be happier and healthier and more consistent if they did sort of like a marathon, you know, block or season where they go, you know, 12 weeks where it's very strict endurance, but most people won't have the, you know, mental tenacity and discipline to just do that, to train under 140 beats or whatever yours is. So with that said, I think, you know, if you looked at a Joe Friel or like a traditional thing, you'd sort of gradually increase the amount of tempo, and then maybe you do a bit of sweet spot, and then you do maybe a bit of threshold. And so you would be like gradually ramping up the amount and then the also the intensity in that plan as spring approached. And I think that's still a great way for most of us to do it. We could probably all get away with, you know, endurance most of the week, maybe some coordination drills, some strides if you're a runner, some spin-ups if you're a cyclist, and then gradually build something like a tempo or a sweet spot. Mm-hmm. Now, that sort of gets tricky again, because this person was asking about something, you know, maybe like really hard VO2 intervals you'll see pop up in some of the Zwift and on these other like trainer softwares where it's, is that, you know, how is that? And I don't really mind that either. I'll a lot of times do VO2 most of the year as well. But I think it's just being careful that the dose is appropriate and you're sort of like doing it for a number of weeks. That's always where I find where it's sort of sporadic, right? You're not doing like 4x8 or 5x4, and you're going to take that across 3 or 4 or 6 weeks and sort of learn about the set. You know, get a little better at it and see some progress, you know, oh, so hard the first week. And then the next week he did a little better and then a little better and you figure it out. So I think that's really the only caution and where you would be more successful. Now, if you had a Zwift race, you know, and you're racing, I've seen that go okay too. But what I do like is that that's not overdone. So the rest of the week isn't like intervals to make up for that. There's a lot of endurance around that. And then probably you'd want to take blocks off of that. I know some of these things work in seasons where it's like 4 or 6 week, you know, every Tuesday night, and then there's a bit of a break and, you know, you could have discipline to sit out some of those. That's probably good advice too. Just so you're not like, and this is all assuming that you are going to race a bunch in the summer. If you're not, then, I mean, you're sort of just moving around the seasons a little bit too.
Yeah. Two other things kind of come out of this. One would be rather, you know, maybe before I added intensity, and I'd also be contemplating cross training / strength training. You know, we often talk about the off season is a really good time, base season is a really good time to kind of build up that strength training practice. And, you know, sometimes doing strength on top of intervals, especially if you've never done strength before, can be a lot mm-hmm. on your body. So definitely if you haven't started strength and you have any inclination to, off season would probably be the time I'd focus on that versus intensity. Just kind of use that time where you have that extra energy. Mm-hmm. Cause I know for me, I mean, Thursday strength, cause I do strength Tuesdays, Thursdays, and like intervals on Wednesdays. And every week doing that strength on Thursday is less of a physical hurdle, but it is a mental hurdle to get that done because I'm kind of like done from the intensity the day before.
Sure. Yeah. And sometimes you have to be careful a little bit with that because, like, you know, you end up with a more intense thing, you know, many days of the week. That's the trouble often with strength is people will put it on the easier day and then you end up with, like, you know, every day of the week ends up being moderate or hard. So sometimes that's where doubles can come in for sure. But that, to your point, more that in the strength training can add a dose of intensity to the week and maybe even a little extra volume to the week and certainly a little extra frequency to the week. So again, you could use that example of you train 8 hours on your bike, but maybe you're fitting in, you know, 2 or 3 strength sessions on top of that, then you might see improvement. And there is always, you know, in that 8 hour example we were talking about where you're just training endurance, which most people wouldn't do, but, you know, use it as a example. You might also find that, like, every week, you know, you're pushing a bit more and, you know, progressing just even at that. So then again, the load might change because the amount of power you're pushing or the pace sure. you're pushing running, you know, even though the volume's about the same, the intensity might come up too. So you mm-hmm. could watch that. That's again, where I think that experiment of those like 6, 8, 12 weeks could be interesting for someone who's like, you know, you sort of do the same thing most weeks and you just keep getting a little faster and a little faster. So anyhow, there's that. The analogy I like, you know, around this intensity, especially in the off season, is this, there's sort of a couple, I think it was Dan Pruhl told me about the idea of like spinning tops. And if you think about like all the, maybe you could think of zones or intensities or however you like to think about it as tops that you're trying to keep spinning. So you don't ever want to like leave one of the tops for, again, like 8 months and then come back and go, oh, I got a sprint all of a sudden, or like, oh, VO2 all of a sudden. So you might think about some of these efforts as sprinkling them in, you know, every 7 to 14 days, something like that, where, yeah, you jump into like a quick short Zwift thing to get some threshold, then maybe do a sprint workout, but none of them are, you know, have to be, it doesn't have to be a ton. It could just be sprinting and warm-ups for workouts or like a tempo workout or something, sure. right? So I always thought that was a good analogy for it. I'm trying to think of the other ones. The other one, Steve Neal used to talk about like walking across grass. And if you like keep walking across the grass, it doesn't grow in. You sort of get like a path. And so that's sort of the same idea. You just want to keep the path worn in. So you can think about that too. When you're thinking about different intensities or something like that, where mm-hmm. it doesn't take a lot. You just have to go, you know, every now and then, once a week or every right. 10 days or something.
Okay. And then last part of this question, I think what we kind of haven't really talked about is the fact that we're talking Zwift races, track racing. That was two racing elements. I do actually think that too much racing at this time of year does lead to a lot of burnout in the summer months. Cause I mean, it's just so easy at this point to be racing pretty much weekly, if not multiple times a week. Mm-hmm. Heck, with Zwift, you could race every day if you wanted to. Like, mm-hmm. I think there's a real danger of you take a few weeks off in the fall and then suddenly, like, boom, you're back racing. This is the time of year where people are getting a little bit itchy. And, you know, I think it's not bad to do a couple of races, even a few races, but I do think you need to be careful and think towards like what the rest of your season, what you want it to look like. If you have a super stacked summer, mm-hmm. say that 10 times fast, then it's probably not the time. Like right now would not be the time to be racing every single weekend, virtually or not, because there still is an element of stress to even a virtual race, right? It's not like, oh, mm-hmm. this is a super chill thing I'm doing in my basement. Usually it's fairly stressful.
Sure. And I mean, what that usually means is that you're not getting longer rides in or the endurance in. So it comes with a trade-off and a bit of a recovery thing. If you are racing, you know, are you taking a day or two off before that or light before that? You know, some people might try not to, but again, if those are races you're trying to do well in, there would inevitably be, you know, recovery before and recovery after. So that is sometimes where it's hard to make progress. It's like during the race season, we expect that, but that's the idea is that you accumulate. I sort of like the idea of calling the base season more of accumulation phase. I don't know that I'm saying that word right for some reason. And then you utilize the utilization phase is sort of what we would call like the competition or the, you know, some people might even include the build phase in that. But if you think about your accumulating fitness and then utilizing fitness. So if you're always utilizing, then right. it's hard to be actually accumulating.
Yeah. I would just be very careful equating intensity or intervals with a race. It's just not exactly the same thing.
I don't think so. No. I mean, it's a good stimulus and a lot of people need to learn how to race. So there is that.
And if you have super bad race day nerves, I think actually like Zwift races and
mm-hmm. I'm seeing that with a few clients. It's like, I'm doing more than I would like to do this time of year, but I'm sort of hedging that it's going to help with the nerves and then the race craft and the working hard, you know, call it mental toughness. Some people don't need, you know, I have clients who've been racing for 30, 40 years and have been elites, right? They can jump into a race any day and they're like at the front, mm-hmm. but almost regardless of fitness, right? Like the fitness is what keeps you in the race, but they're so good. They know how to work and when to work and everything else. They know how to turn it on and they get nervous, but like appropriate level of nervousness. So mm-hmm. those folks, you know, do they need to Zwift race? Probably not, but they're, you know, they're different folks. So I think it's one of those things, it's all these tools, but you want to make sure that you are building the fitness at some point. And again, like I say, if you're racing, we say, you know, race if you're going to race. And that's sort of where there's this thing is, you know, are you racing or are you training? And that's, it's hard to do both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Cool. All right. Well, I think that hopefully answers that question. Before we get into the next question, just a quick shout out to our sponsor, AG1. I'm very excited. We're back to our green background here. If you're watching on the YouTube, it is pretty much the color of an AG1.
There you go.
It is the color of an AG1 packet, which might actually explain why I like AG1 so much, partially for the fantastic green that bring it into like the paint store with me. Mm-hmm. Loving, formerly known as Athletic Greens, AG1 just kind of has all of the things you need, one-stop shop, your probiotics, prebiotics, minerals, vitamins, adaptogens, all of the superfoods, just pretty much the simplest supplement that you can take, mixes up great in water. We have a little frothy thing now that makes it even better. I think it tastes great. We actually ran out. I miscalculated. We ran out in February when we were away from home. It wouldn't have made sense to try to ship it to where we were. And I missed it in the morning.
For sure. And then when we got back to having it, I was also a rest week and I felt like I was on fire. And I, you know, was it the rest week or was it the AG1? I don't know. Maybe a bit of both.
A little bit of both. Yeah. I also found, to be honest, I was not drinking a big glass of water in the morning without it, because that's actually become my habit. Is I wake up and I have that as like a huge glass of water before I get into my coffee. So it's kind of got the added benefit of forcing me to do my morning hydration.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just love the kind of nutritional insurance, knowing that I sort of have covered all of my bases no matter what happens for the rest of the day. Although obviously we try to focus on the healthy living while we're home. But anyway, if you want to try it out for yourself, you can head over to drinkag1.com/MollyH. Again, drinkag1.com/MollyH. You get 5 free travel packs, which are super convenient, especially as racing season is coming up, plus a year's supply of immune-supporting vitamin D drops. So yeah, take ownership over your health and try AG1.
You know, it's funny. I see a lot of the bike packers now are not necessarily even AG1, but like the greens thing seem to be like circulating, which you were talking about last year, and seems to be, I'm seeing more of this where it's, you know, you've been out there for 2 or 3 weeks and you haven't had a vegetable. So yeah, you might something to try for bike packing season, perhaps.
I feel like it probably took like one bike packer getting scurvy and it just sort of like spread through the community. Like, oh gosh, we should probably make sure we're getting some vitamins in.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, honestly, that's actually a fantastic, like, I think we've brought it hiking before. I think it makes a big difference. So check it out.
So we have, this one's like a middle, this isn't really a question.
I was going to say, not a question, but a headline that I'm excited about.
Sure. So we get the question a lot. You know, we've predicted last year was the year of strength training coming into cycling, certainly with the menopause. We had the second edition of Roar, Stacey Sims, Celine Yeager. Their book just came back out, I guess. Do you say back or released? The second edition was released. So you should definitely check that out. Big, you know, we always say the heavy lifting is a big deal. The protein, big deal. So last year, I think, was big for strength training. Mm-hmm. I think that was a safe prediction. I don't know that everyone was doubting me or arguing against me on my prediction. But what we hear a lot is, you know, I've never strength trained in my life. It doesn't fit into my life. I'm 40. How am I going to start? I'm 50. How am I going to start? So this study caught my eye because it was actually someone who started, a woman who started powerlifting at 63 and became world champion at 71. And there's actually two articles. I thought it was the same person, but it's actually two different people.
Oh, wow.
All very similar stories. One is the world champion, but one is not the world champion, but one went into powerlifting competitions, very similar ages, which was sort of neat, you know, a bit different levels, but the study on the world champion. So 63 and then 71, I thought there was a few things. They started weightlifting, never had done it before. Does it say that they were fairly inactive before that or not? I'm not sure. The study is forthcoming, so I don't have all the details on this. In any case, they started, they hadn't really done a lot, let's say that, at 60. And then what I love is that they did become world champion at 70, you know, whatever is involved in that at 70. But it took, like, what I love about this is that at 60, this was was that 8 years? What is that? Mm-hmm. 8 years, right? Which we often talk about, you know, 10,000 hours or whatever, you know, when we're talking to kids, a lot of times it's like, this is a 16-year journey to the Olympics. So are you ready? Right. But I love this, that it's 8 years, even at 63, we're thinking like long-term, you know, where are we going to be in a decade from now? It's just so neat. And so I think some of the things we'd love to see out of this is, can you see some of these things? So it's like,
okay, so 63-year-old woman starts powerlifting at 63, world champion by 71, carries 70% less abdominal fat while being 30% more
muscular.
That's
like the high-risk fat, right? You can have body fat, but especially the fat around your midsection.
Which, like, hooray for women. That's where we tend to collect fat the most.
That's the risky stuff, right? Around your organs, you know, as far as predisposition to basically anything.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so there you go. And then what was the other? There's 30% more muscular.
30% stronger than non-lifting women at the same age. Honestly, I'm kind of surprised that she's only 30% stronger than non-lifting women at 70.
Mm-hmm. You'd have to see, I guess, you know, because it's some of it is, you know, she didn't do the article on the other person who was similar, not world champion, but still quite impressive. They were saying, you know, she was saying that, like, you know, the nature doesn't encourage women to do much in the, like, much of anything after 70. So it was sort of her catchphrase. There's an interesting sentence there. So, or to, nature doesn't allow women to put on much muscle or do anything after 70. It was the gist of it. So, you know, this idea that, you know, once you're, they talk even 20 and 30 years old, it's hard to put on muscle. So, you know, at 60 and 70, it's going to be harder. So I think it's pretty impressive with either of them, but especially this world champion, that the 30% was that 10 years where it's very hard to put on a lot. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm impressed by the 30% more muscular, but I'm confused about only being 30% stronger. I would have expected like 200% stronger, because like if she can bench like say 90 pounds, does that imply that most 70-year-old women can bench 60? Because I would say most 35-year-old women can't bench 60.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably one of those average things. And then who can actually come and get studied in a lab, maybe, where you might have a little bit of...
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into the study because that percentage just seems somewhat off.
Yeah, I don't know.
Seems low.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. I mean, I don't know that you're going to get 200%, but it could be. It could be. I mean, those are smaller numbers, too, that you're, again, to your point, right? Like, you're talking about 60 pounds, so 30% is a fair bit.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In any case, hopefully, you know, inspiring,
yeah,
if nothing yeah. else, that, you know, you can start new things at 30 or 40 or 60, mm-hmm. you know, and where you go, even, I guess, older too, right?
We yeah.
know lots of people. So,
well, it's that whole, like, it's never too late to, or like the best time to start was 20 years ago. The second best time to start is today.
I'm seeing that about planting trees a lot. That quote, for some reason, seems to be coming up a lot.
I think that quote was about planting trees. Like it the is. Initial.
It
yeah.
is. Yeah. It was the best time was to do it was 20 years ago. But
so
like
the arborists are reclaiming it. They're like, could you please stop using this for other contexts? Like, we're kind of over talking about it for business and sport and compound interest. Let's get back to the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Yeah.
So we'll put the links to mm-hmm. both the article and then the study, I guess.
Cool.
Yep.
Put them in the show notes. What else do we have?
Oh, there's one below that one.
Can you scroll down? I'm holding our backdrop up by my elbow here.
This is high.
So yeah, we've had some issues.
I think we've covered this before, but we'll do it again.
We'll do a quick hit here. What counts as training? So Training Peaks includes yoga and quote other. So we've had this question a lot about, you know, does shoveling snow count as training? Does mowing the lawn count as training?
Hockey.
Hockey.
It's very Canadian questions today. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll put a link to the hockey one because I feel like I yelled a lot about that one.
Did you say that it didn't count? What was your, do you remember?
No, we were saying it kind of count, or we said it didn't count, but then I also caveated it by like, okay, so if you play a 3-hour hockey game, just because it doesn't count doesn't mean you should do your intensity workout right after hockey.
I mean, even an hour, yeah, it's very intense. Yeah. Yeah.
So at any rate, what counts as training? So basically like if you're a bike racer, what do you log in your Training Peaks?
Mm-hmm. Actually, downhill skiing is another one. So,
especially if you're working with a coach, I guess, just to like kind of keep your Training Peaks clean and yeah. make it make sense.
Sort of like tax. I see this is often like a philosophical and an accounting question. Mm. So you want to align with your coach or whoever you're working with on what, you know, what is your goal and what's important to you. I tend to think this in a few ways. It's like scheduling, to Molly's point about hockey. You know, if you're at an hour long hockey thing on Monday night, you probably can't also ride the trainer. Some people can fit in a strength session or something that day, but there's a bit of a scheduling. So like you almost need to put it in the calendar if you're working with someone. And then the other consideration is sort of that you mentioned earlier, that frequency, volume, intensity, you know, beginner, intermediate, advanced. So if you're the frequency limited person, I would say you put any movement, any sport, anything that looks like not sitting on the couch should be in that Training Peaks, because you want to be getting that routine of like, I am an active person. I am, you know, a capable person. I can move in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. I move often. And that's yoga. It's, I don't even like, if it looks like not sitting on the couch, then I think it's great. And
so
I think
it's more habit establishment than like actual
for those people. Yeah. 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 And I think, you know, is it going to be super representative of a bicycle performance? Right. Cause that's the ultimate question here is you get into the Training Peak stuff and then you're like the fitness score. And so you'll see some people will log like the dog walk, hockey practice, 5 hours of downhill skiing, and it looks like they did 18 hours of training. And in some ways they were active. They were sure. out in the outdoors doing downhill skiing, but they might've never ridden their bike all week. So now you have 18 hours and maybe it put an intensity from heart rate
right.
or pace from like a quote unquote run, but it's a walk, which is good. But again, maybe not the same as running or biking. So it's like it could be misleading. They might have a higher fitness. They might get bumped up to that volume or intensity, sort of TSS or load, but they might never ride their bike or very infrequently.
Right. You're sort of almost creating a false narrative for yourself.
So now you have accounting, right? That's why I call it accounting, because it's sort of like at the end of the year, you made 100,000 and I made 100,000, but you were collecting, this is insulting, and we can make a better thing, but like you were using Monopoly money. Right. Or maybe that's unfair. Maybe we use currency. So you were collecting
I was collecting USD and you were collecting Canadian.
Yeah. And who's going to win? I don't know. Yeah. But that would be the thing, is maybe that's a great analogy. So like the exchange obviously isn't 1-to-1. It's like 70 to 100. And that's often how the training benefit of this cross training stuff. What's the crossover benefit of running versus biking? So even those ones, which are similar, which my schedule always has running and biking and strength in it. So the running ends up bumping up my fitness, or what my load. I prefer to call it the chronic load, or what people will call fitness score. So you have to be careful, because it might not represent my best bike performance, even though it looks like maybe I've been training, say, 15 hours in a week. Maybe I was only on my bike for 12.
Right.
So it's tough. Now, again, in that easier to use example is if I was just downhill skiing for 10 hours every weekend, and then, you know, playing hockey on Tuesday nights, and then I rode my bike for 3 hours and I did one or two short 20-minute runs or something. Again, then it gets tricky, right? If we're trying to use that load to predict your performance at the Spring Classic in April or May.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I usually suggest to clients, and again, you can account it however you want. You just have to be consistent with how you're doing it, so that you can look back and say, like, last year I did this and this year I did this. If you're frequency limited and you struggle to get something in most days of the week, then I would just log everything and be really proud of all the movement you're doing and talk about it and log it. Like, say, I did yoga. It was great. I felt good. I did a walk. I went here. I went, you know, riding with this person. These are the intervals I did. You know, this is the Zwift race I did. I think that's super important for those folks. And then once you get into riding, you know, you're riding those 5 and 6 days a week, then I think we're going to be maybe a bit more picky. You know, maybe the walks, we can just count your steps on your watch. We don't need to log walks as a thing. We could keep that separate and then just say, like, hey, you know, you're not sleeping well. Have you been getting 10,000 steps in a day? Like, what are your steps looking? You're like, oh no, I've been riding my bike all the time. I never walk. I stopped walking because you told me not to count it in training. Well, okay, well, now we need to look at this. So then you might count that separate in like your normal person stuff, just on your Garmin app or something, just look at your steps, or your iPhone tracks this separately. We don't necessarily need to put it in the training log. And so that's how I would start doing that. And downhill skiing, some of these things, if you want to put them in the calendar, you could put them in, but just don't log heart rate or duration. Just put some comments in that and call it downhill skiing. Then you can see on Sunday you didn't train because you were downhill skiing, and like you can put all your stats in there, maybe a link to a workout file if some of the skiers like to track, you know, how much they descended in their downhill skis or something like that. So there you go. But I think you just need to be careful with that. And I would say once you get up into that more advanced stage, I would say you got to be careful.
Yeah, I think the only other caveat I'd be is just be very careful if you tend to be kind of on the obsessive side with exercise. Like, you know, you can kind of fall into really bad habits, because I think, you know, if suddenly you're walking 10 miles a day, or, you know, you are downhill skiing like 3 hours a day because the skiing is fantastic and stuff, and you're just trying to kind of like cram that in and you're not recording it, that's actually kind of doing your coach a disservice or you a disservice, because you aren't really seeing it. And
yeah,
it can add up. So I think if there's like chronic or even like a huge acute load or something, like,
we know that there's a lot of endurance athletes, especially, like, as I said, like, you know, you get to these folks who are the higher end, the intensity limited. That the fatigue is part of intensity. So yeah, you have to be very careful. And there are a lot of us that have a bit of a tendency towards like a exercise. We'll call it an obsession, if not an addiction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you're not necessarily, like, when you say walking the dog, you actually mean like a 7-mile hike up and down a mountain.
You have a team of huskies. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Walked dog.
Sure. And so that's, but I mean, again, that's where sometimes I'll say with cross training, like cross training, maybe we should go back to even just the basic stuff here, is like, if the heart rate is up and it's cross training for cycling, running, snowshoeing, cross country skiing, what else do people do? The elliptical, aggressive uphill hiking, long distance hiking probably counts. Probably there's some water sports we're forgetting. Those, I think you count those because that's, you know, cardiovascular exercise. I think that makes sense.
And the same goes for more of like a fitness oriented yoga, like, you know, any of the yogas that are more, you know, vinyasa flow or power yoga or anything like that, where you actually are moving a fair bit and it's almost feels like more of a strength training thing. I'd say Pilates actually a lot of the time should get
in like strength training. Sure. Yeah. Now, some people will not record, you know, with strength. Again, they might put it in. This is the intricacies of a log. So some people won't necessarily record, like I would never record heart rate during the strength training. So it actually goes in as volume, so time, but it doesn't go in as the load because there's no intensity put with it, which is somewhat, that's sort of a workaround too. Now, in the load, the TSS chart, the performance manager chart, your fitness score, you can trim that to like certain sports as well. And so in the Joe Friel triathlon Bible, they talk about, because there's three sports in triathlon, obviously, the fatigue you feel comes from all of these things. That's sort of what we're talking about. So hockey and all these things, they build up fatigue, which is the fitness score. Fatigue is not the fitness score. It's the fatigue. And then the fitness is sport specific. So that fitness score or CTL, it is for biking or for, and so that's sometimes a workaround you could use. I find it like a little convoluted to do it that way, but that's how you could do it with something like triathlon or someone who's doing a bunch of other stuff, you know, even just for the chart, you could just reduce the sports that are included in that calculation too.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be the other workaround. What really starts happening though, is you get a very, very clunky calendar, right? Like you use a spreadsheet, which is the same difference as like a calendar. And so if you started including like every walk you did and, you know, all this stuff in the calendar, do you include your strength in there too?
No, I mean, my coach is aware of it.
Yeah. But you sort of just talk about like, okay, you're doing it twice a week or something in this routine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, and that's certainly something that I've seen people do, you know, they build out those comments for the day. So it's a bike workout, but then you mention the other things that you did in the day. And then that way it could sort of be encapsulated as well. Sure. But now, you know, Training Peaks has a couple other, you know, sort of an ad for Training Peaks. That's not really
not
paid
sponsored.
For. They knew they could. They have things like notes and availability. So a lot of my clients, you know, who do downhill skiing or some of them do like car racing type stuff. They'll use availability, which just blocks it off as like, hey coach, I'm only a bit, you know, I can be partially or fully unavailable. It's called availability, but it's like when you're unavailable. So you can give a little bit of notes for that. So a lot of them, like I find that's a great way to just say like, yeah, that day I can't put anything on as the coach, and I can see, oh, it's for downhill skiing all day. So I still know that like on Monday, it probably isn't the day to just smoke them with, you know, something really hard, you know, sure. Let's get them back rolling with more of an endurance and some spin ups. And then maybe Tuesday might be the day, right? And that again is a great sign that maybe Monday we can try and get training because they're not going to be training maybe Sunday. But again, the fatigue, as you say, you have to be careful with.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hopefully that cleared it up. I think we might have just muddied the waters even more, but there you have it. Again, if you have any questions, consummateathlete.com, @consummateathlete on Instagram. And if you like the show and you don't want to miss it, make sure you're subscribed, rate, review. And also you can head over to consummateathlete.com to subscribe to our newsletter. We have articles that come out on the site every single week. We have all the new podcasts and show notes and all that jazz. So definitely subscribe to the newsletter so you don't miss anything and you can check out everything we're up to. All right. With that, thanks so much for tuning in and we will see you next week.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Consummate Athlete podcast. If you want to hear more training, racing, and endurance sport advice, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. You can also subscribe to our newsletter at consummateathlete.com for a weekly dose of inspiration and advice straight to your inbox.